You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. So how do you find amazing candidates fast? Simple. Just use Indeed. Stop wasting time with other job sites that aren't getting your posts seen. With Indeed's sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top, getting in front of the right candidates fast. And it works. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs get 45% more applications than non-sponsored ones. Join the 3.5 million employers worldwide who are hiring great talent with Indeed. Best part? No monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. There's no need to wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of the show will get a £100 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/show. Just go to Indeed.com/show right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/show. Terms and conditions apply.
You're about to hear a preview of Partially Examined Life supporter exclusive content. To learn how to get the whole thing, check out partiallyexaminedlife.com/support. Hey, this is your Partially Examined Life nightcap. We're recording this on Wednesday, April 23rd. Seth is in Europe or something right now, but the rest of us are here. Hey, guys.
What's up?
Hey.
This seemed a good time to have one of these, finishing up our empathy/sympathy unit, but not done with this issue. This is one of the things I want to talk about, is how far you want to go.
I want to go all the way, Mark.
So the thing that I was, you know, we only really got a taste of from these two folks was just moral epistemology. How do we know what is right and wrong? So we got that straightforwardly, phenomenologically, from Brentano, that we just have, how did he put it? He didn't say we have a moral sense. It just appears to us objectively, intuitively, that some things are better than other things. Is that pretty much what? I know Dylan wasn't on this. Wes, does that seem an accurate characterization? I've already forgotten Brentano.
Yeah, some things are worthy of being loved. They just have that property of being inherently worthy of being loved. It's right to love certain things and not right to love others. It's kind of reminiscent of one of the people that Hume is actually arguing against, since we're going to be doing Hume soon. But this idea that...
Is it Clark?
Well, there's Samuel Clark, and yes. Then there's another yes. guy. But yeah, one of these views is just that certain...
Well, it's rationalism, right?
For Clark, yeah. It's rationalism. But for Clark, it's, moral truths are like kind of like the truths of mathematics. And I think one of the metaphors is this idea of fittingness, so that human beings relate to each other in certain ways that are fitting and certain ways that are unfitting, and the way that a certain shape might fit into another geometrical shape or not fit into another geometrical shape. These are the types of ideas that are floating around. So I don't know how Brentano compares exactly. But
it makes sense the way you describe what Brentano said, that there would be effectively ordered and disordered ways of loving, for instance. But when we make it like mathematics or like physics or something, it makes me wonder what's the experiment that's going to fail on those grounds, or what's the calculation, that's going to come out that tells you that 2 + 2 doesn't equal 6.
Yeah.
It just seems like a weird thing. I mean, the main thing being is that in all of these moral cases, right, it's not like people don't do immoral things, or it's not people don't make choices that are contrary to their oughts. It's that they, in fact, do them, and the question becomes whether or not we deem them to be correct or not. But correct isn't based upon something not working. In math and science, being right amounts to working or not working.
Yeah, Hume has lots of good arguments against these rationalists, but maybe Brentano, I might be making an unfair comparison. I think maybe during that episode we thought of G.E. Moore and... Right, because G.E. Moore is writing in light. He understands Hume's objections and agrees with many of them, but he wants to still say that there are objective moral truths, and that I think that we have something like rational intuition of basic moral properties, and then you just can't explain them any further. They're not explicable. At a certain point, you just say, well, we don't know what explains them. It just is what it is, but it's the fact that, murder is wrong, and that's a fact.
When I was listening back to episode 45, which is our first time tackling Hume, but also Smith, we didn't really address in any detail this moral sense theory, if the empiricists are the... See, this is what I'm trying to figure out. Hume is definitely a sentimentalist, right? We know what is good because we just find ourselves reacting positively to it, or we find ourselves reacting in revulsion to it. And that, so that sort of seems like the same thing that Brentano was saying, is that we have a love, we find ourselves loving it, but then we, on top of that, we judge this love to be a worthy love, whereas some loves we don't judge to be a worthy love. So even that much, does that, it sounds like Hume has the, you know, the basis of morality is the way that we emotionally react to things. But then we have to bring in other people's opinions. We have to bring in theory. We have to make it consistent. We realize that if we didn't have sentiments about things, we wouldn't have any moral valuations at all. But that doesn't mean that our sentiments are always correct, right? We could have a love sure. that is an unworthy love, and we might not even realize that it is an unworthy love until we look at it from a different perspective.
Yeah, well, how would you even decide? I haven't gotten started reading the Hume and reminding myself of it. You end up bringing up all the reason, all the discussion about why we would even talk about us needing to change our behavior, that there's good and bad behavior at all. Or that, you know, like you said, loving something that's unworthy, or you wanting to do something that we would say you ought not do. And what does it even mean to say that under these terms? Even the murder is wrong question is like a super interesting one, unless you either say that murder is just killing wrongly, and so therefore it's just sort of murder is wrong by definition.
Sure.
Or you say that, you know, killing human beings is wrong for some characteristic of human beings, because that's just human beings, because all the other animals kill each other all the time and kill other things all the time.
Right. This does depend on the nature of the subject.
Mm-hmm.
So infants and animals, and they're not constituted correctly to be subjected to moral laws. And I think even rationalists would have to admit that, right?
What do you mean, even rationalists? I mean, rationalists definitely. Like, if you think you need reason, then these things without reason are not going to be members of the moral community. It might not even have any rights, you know, if you're Descartes or Kant, I think.
Sure. The children versus the animals is an interesting case, but maybe in that respect, animals... I'm thinking about agency and evolution in this respect again.
Children get, I want to say grandfathered in, but it's the opposite of that, right? It's because of their future state.
They get grandfathered out.
They get childrened in.
Yeah, my point is that even if you're an objectivist, maybe if you think moral norms are objective and somehow written into the world, right? It depends on the entity, right? It's not just that killing is wrong per se. It's always the constitution of the entity in question performing the act is always at stake. And of course, Hume is, maybe there's an element of constructionism. And the question is how we avoid some element of constructionism. So for instance, right, Kant has an ingenious rationalist solution to all this, but it involves the human will. So, right, we're contradicting morality is intimately tied to autonomy. And if we will something immoral, we contradict ourselves, we contradict our own will, and then therefore undermine our own autonomy.
So that kind of argument, whether you decide that it's ultimately constructivist or not, that seems like the only way you're going to end up with an account of moral distinction between good and bad is if you say the conditions for being a flourishing human being are X, or the conditions for being a flourishing human society are Y. And therefore, if I don't make these moral distinctions objectively, then I cause them to be inconsistent, or I undermine them, or annihilate society, or annihilate who I am as a human being. Then you end up with it. But it's never going to be objective in the way that my building will fall down if I use calculations in which 2 + 2 = 6. I mean, it's a completely different.
Yeah. What Kant is capturing is that there's some sense in which the laws have to come from ourselves, right? Rather than nature.
Yes, exactly.
And yet perhaps there's a way in which we can save the objectivity of those laws, but they have to come from the inside.
So I guess there's two stages that could be rationalist or empiricist. One is just getting basic moral truths.
Mm-hmm.
Do we just have an intuition? And if we just have an intuition, does it have to be a rational intuition, right? What I said in the episode 45 was that Adam Smith did not care about this argument between Clark and Hume. about, do we have a moral sense or is it reason that tells us? We just know. We just know these basic things. Mm-hmm. So we have the basic things, but then how do we build out actual moral principles from that? Because you're right, Dylan, like in considering a law, it could fail in the same way that an engineering project could fail if you take as your fundamental moral principle, like the principle of utility or something like that. If this thing that's supposed to help a lot of people ends up not helping a lot of people, it has failed. Quod erat demonstrandum, right? So even if you had moral sentiment was ultimately grounding the basic moral principles, you can still use reason when actually doing. Mm-hmm. So that's part of what confuses it for me of like, is there this sharp distinction between rationalism and empiricism? I feel like maybe it was something that bubbled up for a brief time when it was there in epistemology, and that by the time certainly of Kant, well, Kant is, I mean, we call him a rationalist, and he explicitly, you know, is arguing it doesn't matter what people actually approve of. You know, we don't use a democratic process to figure out what the right is. And it's not going to vary by society because there is something, a rational intuition that we use to grasp these things. So how would like Moore or Brentano land on that? It seems they both want to have the certainty and the objectivity that Kant has, even if they're not so stuck on it being a purely rational process. These are just the questions I've entered into this wanting to know. If we base it on sentiment, could the sentiment be sympathy or empathy?
If that sounds like the kind of thing that you want to hear more about, then please go to partiallyexaminedlife.com/support. Thanks for listening.